Hello.
Hi.
This is Linda.
Who do I have?
This is Linda. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Linda. We'll be getting started in just 1 minute. So this is Terry Temkin, and for the rest of you on the call, we'll be kicking off in about 15 seconds, and we look forward to a great presentation today. Good afternoon, and welcome to Serving Nonprofit Boards is Good Business. This is the third in an 8-part teleseminar series on enhancing board service provided by Nonprofit Affinity Group of SAC, the Society for the Advancement of Consultants. I'm Terry Temkin, a founding principal of Core Strategies for Nonprofits. And for those of you who have been on the first two, you know that I'm also one of your instructors for this teleseminar series. I'm going to be serving as your host today, and I will be presenting our speaker momentarily. So I just want to thank all of you who are on the call, and those of you who have been on for a while know they have high quality sessions, and I know you're going to get a lot from Linda today. Just a reminder that Laura sent you some information prior to the session, and the handouts for today are actually on Linda's website, which I will be providing at the end of the session. So you could also go there now. It's www.leveragetomarket.com. You can use either the numerical 2 or TO, leveragetomarket.com. So you will find some of the materials that Linda has to offer. So before I introduce Linda, let me just tell you that, as you heard in the recorded intro, we are being recorded, and we will send you an email with to the recording after this session, and that will be available for 30 days. Our goal of these teleseminars is to share our extensive knowledge about how to help nonprofits and to enhance your contributions as a board member and turn to add value to your business. We are delighted to collaborate with fellow members of SAC and the Ellen Weiss community. Just to give you an idea of the flow, our speaker, Linda Popke, will spend approximately 40 minutes discussing the topic, and then we'll open it up for questions. Keep the questions flowing. We ask that you email your questions to Laura Kuska. I'm sorry, Laura, and I know she's on the call, and I get it wrong every time. Anytime throughout the presentation, just send them on to Laura. She'll feed to our presenter, Linda, at the appropriate time in the session. Laura's email address is Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at makuska.com, M as in Mary, I, K as in kite, U, S as in Sam, K as in kite, A as in apple dumb, Laura at makuska.com. Okay, so today's presentation is Tell the Story. Popke is president of Leverage to Market Associates, and she is an award-winning strategic marketing consultant who transforms organizations through powerful marketing programs serving a broad range of clients, including nonprofit organizations. So our focus will be on the nonprofits, and Linda, I'll turn it over to you to start.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Terry, and thank you everyone who's joining us both in person and listen to this recording afterwards. It's a pleasure to be here with you. This is an area that's dear to my heart. I served 2 years as the president of the nonprofit group Women in Planning, which is headquartered in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. And I'm also doing my second year as the vice president of marketing for the Northern California chapter of the Business Marketing Association. So those are nonprofit associations I've been involved with. I also served as the president of the Palo Alto chapter of the American Diabetes Association. So there was a cause-based nonprofit that I was involved with as a board member. And I've worked with many other types of nonprofits and membership organizations in a volunteer role, as a mentor, a volunteer, a committee chair, and also I have nonprofits who have been clients. It's a very important area. So I'm really excited to share my insights with you on this topic. And first of all, it's never easy to promote a nonprofit, even when things are going wonderfully economically. But when you have the kind of environment that we've been in for the last couple of years, that makes it more challenging. And as a board member or someone who's considering becoming a board member, there are things that you need to think about in terms of what you're going to do to promote and tell the community about your nonprofit. So first of all, the last couple of years of the economy, we've really seen some things that have changed and some things that have stayed the same. Climate is very different. And even though we are in the midst of an economic recovery, we are seeing things happen and move forward. It's different for nonprofits than it is for many for-profit organizations. So we're seeing business feeling better about that, but a lot of people are still hooked on making donations. It's not exactly the way it was a few years ago. We need to kind of get used to the new normal. And the fact that sometimes large donations, large donors may not be as generous as they were before. In some cases, may not be as generous as they were before as well. So we need to understand what's changing. And what's changing is really things are more competitive. There may be fewer donors, fewer foundations, or they may be fewer or smaller gifts. And individuals, as I said, may have less money available. So even though they may be willing to support your foundation from a financial standpoint, they may not be able to make gifts as often or as generous as they did in the past. And then on the other side of the equation, there's more people that need help. And of course, depending on what your organization is upon, and people are just a little bit more, I guess I'd use the word cranky about things, a little bit less open to solicitations, they're a little bit less friendly in some areas. Unemployment remains high, we have all this stuff going on with the debt ceiling and concerns going on out of Washington. So there's just a little bit of a concern. There are some really good things that have happened over the last couple of years. And the first is we have a high rate, which is not wonderful. However, people in transition may have more time to volunteer or to work pro bono. So this can really work very positively for you as an organization looking to recruit volunteers and to have people willing to share their time and resources, non-financial resources, with you. Now, one thing to recall, as a board member, one of the things you're going to need to do is probably to recruit volunteers and people to help support your organization. And you can remind people who are in transit that working pro bono for a nonprofit is a great way to keep your skills fresh, up to date, as well as to look good on your resume. And so I've seen a lot of even people who are starting a consulting business or people who are between jobs that said, you know, I just have this gap on my resume that I didn't do very much, but let me go and provide skills that I'd be using in a for-profit in a commercial type of enterprise. Let me provide those at no charge to a nonprofit and be able to really benefit from my experience, and I'll be able to benefit from that. So that's a good thing. The other thing that's happening is I really think people are looking for meaning. This stuff that's gone on the last couple of years, I see a lot of, and particularly I find this encouraging in young people who are starting to make money in social media and other type endeavors that are starting foundations or trying to help people that are less fortunate or trying to creative ways to help nonprofits raise money. So all of that is good, and there's a need to connect with causes that you as an individual care about. So that sets the stage for the bad and the good, and the question is, when you're trying to tell the story of profit, is how do you turn that to your advantage? So there's a couple of things to think about. First of all, as a nonprofit, you have different audiences than you would as a for-profit or an educational institution or even a government entity. And so some key groups of people are volunteers, as I mentioned, donors, sponsors, a little bit different than donors. Sponsors may be, donors may be giving a one-time gift. Sponsors may be someone who provides their name and in-kind sponsorship to your organization. And then of constituents or members that you need to reach as well. In addition, you have other members of your board that are a key part of your audience, because you're all, and not just to have your name on the board, and not just to show up to meetings, but also when you take on a board role for a nonprofit, as has been mentioned earlier in this series, there are a whole bunch of things that are happening, and just different expectations going to be providing another level of value to the group. And then the other, you've got policymakers. In California, for example, it would be Sacramento. In Washington, there's a local basis that you may be working with. So you may be, depending on what the nature of your organization is, you may be impacted by what happens in a political arena or a regulatory arena, and so that may all be an audience that you need to spend time with. Now, the basics haven't changed. Your nonprofit to be successful, you have to offer a quality service to an audience who needs it at a reasonable price. And that's very similar to what we would do in the for-profit arena. But as opposed to a product, you're offering a service. You need to have an audience who can use that and knows about you and is willing to invest in you and have the give you the credibility that suggests I want to work with you, and at a reasonable price. Now, the reasonable price very often with a nonprofit is zero. You know, we provide our service no charge. But very often, nonprofits do charge for certain services. They charge a reduced fee than what would happen if I had to go for a for-profit organization. They have to cover costs. They may have to buy supplies. So just because an organization is a nonprofit doesn't mean there isn't cash going through there. And certainly those of us who have worked with large national or multinational nonprofits, you know that they have multi-million dollar budgets. So not a nonprofit is starving or cash-free. So what to understand this, you really have to identify and understand who your target audience is. It sounds very simple. For example, if you're the American Cancer Society, you're obviously concerned about cancer and people who are either have had cancer or are recovering that. But your audience is beyond that. Is it just the patients? Is it the caregivers? The medical providers who are doing research? Is it the community that's involved with people who are recovering from cancer or fighting cancer? So it's understanding who all those audiences are and what their hot buttons are that will really help you tell the right story that hits a button. Because one of the things that Alan tells us is that logic makes people think and emotion makes people act. You know, Alan is absolutely correct about this, and there's nowhere it's more true than in the arena, because we're talking about causes. We're talking about things that are going to put hot buttons, so to speak, in a good way. We want you to feel bad about the kids that are starving, you know, in Africa. We want you to feel bad about the fact that there are patients in the U.S. that need the right meds for their particular medical situation, and that there's Alzheimer's patients that the caregivers really need respite because they need time. We really want to hit your hot buttons there more than even Apple trying to sell you iPhone or iPad or anyone else trying, you know, Starbucks trying to make you feel good about having that $5. So it's important that you understand your target audience and what makes them click. You can promote your services so the right people can find out about them. Now, what's interesting is you as a director are going to be selling your nonprofit. Selling, I don't mean trying to sell it and get money for it, but you're selling and promoting, marketing your nonprofit. You are the face of the organization. Now, if you are a director, they may not have told you this when they signed you up for this role. If you're not a director yet, I'm telling you that even if they don't tell you this, it is a very, very critical role for you. Because one of the reasons that you've been selected to do this is because of what you've done and who you represent and your connections in the community. And so they want you on the board because they want your creativity, they want your intelligence, they want your experience and your hard work, but they also want you to reach out and help their organization, which is probably suffering from very short staff and very limited resources. They want to supplement the people who are there working every day with the ability to reach out and carry the message by people who are welcome, such as you as a board member. So you're the face of the organization, certainly at org events and meetings, and that, of course, makes sense because you're there representing the organization, but also the community. And that's important because it's not just when you're at an event for your organization, but whenever you're in the community, you are representing the organization. And certainly, we're going to presume that all of us are conducting ourselves appropriately. There's no Charlie Sheen type behavior going on, but you need to be aware of the fact that you are, if you are representing a literacy organization, then certainly if there's something that comes up regarding literacy or books or education in schools, that you may be asked to make a comment. And you need to keep in mind that even though on that particular day you're not thinking so much about your organization, people are going to connect you to it, and you have to take those opportunities to tell the story as impactfully and effectively as you possibly can. So, well, besides the community in general, with stakeholders and government officials, as I mentioned, and that depends really on the nature of your organization, excuse me, and really who you're, who you're trying to reach, and what government or regulatory officials might be appropriate. So in some cases, you reach out to whether it be town officials or county or state or even lobby in Washington. Again, in your state capital. In some cases, it may be just a matter of representing the organization at public events that are appropriate. So that, again, will depend on the nature of your organization and the nature of the involvement with various government officials. But the other audience that you're going to need to tell the story to is really the business community. And that's very important because, one of the reasons you were selected, or one of the reasons you want to be selected to be a board member, is because you have these connections. And so you're going to be expected to use your contacts to promote your organization. And that means that if you know someone and there's an event coming up and we're looking for a sponsorship and we're looking for an organization to either put their name on something, to donate money, to provide air cover in the sense of a promotion or in-kind sponsorship, that you're going to be asked to go out on behalf of your organization and lobby individuals and make those contacts. And so that's important because if you're not comfortable with it, you need to be clear about that up front and to consider whether or not you want to be in this board role. Because in most cases, the organization will rely upon you to do that. Now, in some cases, you may say, I don't have contacts, or this is not the best use of my time. In that case, you're probably going to find another way that you can help tell the story of the organization. But it's very expected in most groups that you will do this. And the converse of that is it is expected that you will not, capital N-O-T underline, you will not use the organization to sell your products or services. So this is the type of situation where you really are being asked to do for others, and this will help you in the sense that you will be known for the generosity, for the work that you do, for the fact that you're involved in the community, but it's not expected that, first of all, you're going to sell your organization, your services to the organization that you are on the board of, so do not expect to consult to that organization for a fee, number one. Number two, it's also not expected that you will solicit either the board members or the constituents or members of the organization or volunteers or other sponsors for your services. So you are not to sell your consulting services. You're there to provide a service and your contacts to the nonprofit organization. Now, that being said, that doesn't mean that you're going to benefit from all the hard work you do with this organization. And the way you benefit is that, as Alan says, consulting is a relationship business. And so you're building relationships. And if you are doing this the right way, you're building relationships with the kind of people who will want to work with you in other capacities. And they will want to be part of, they'll see the type of entire power that you bring and the type of creativity and the dedication and the perfection. They'll say, wow, you know, gee, if I had the opportunity to use Terry or Laura, I'm going to recommend her to someone. And so that's absolutely an appropriate way to use your connections. You can also use your connections to introduce your clients who may benefit them, et cetera, to be a connector and a networker, so to speak. And being seen by the right people, doing the right things, is a great way to build your credibility in the organization and in the community. But I just want to clarify that you should not, definitely underline not, be expecting to go in there and use this directly to sell to the people that you are working with in a nonprofit capacity. So now that we have that clear, let's think about what makes a good product for your nonprofit. And let's spend it for the most of donors and sponsors and people who might be in the position to provide money to money and or food, let's say, to your organization. So first of all, I have a need to be affiliated with you. And that doesn't mean that they are suffering from a disease or that they are illiterate themselves, but they need to feel, in many organizations, they have a certain amount of money or resources that are allocated to community, and so they've identified that. Or perhaps in some cases are individuals who have had, they've been touched by cancer, they've been touched by diabetes. They feel very badly about what's going on with kids that are, you know, that are not doing well in foster homes, whatever the case may be. And so there's that connection there. And they're motivated to then meet that need and do something about it. And they have either money or time to spend on it. So you may have an organization that has you in the past, but due to the situation today, due to the way business has gone or mergers and acquisitions or just whatever, not really in a position to support you the same way moving forward. That doesn't mean you drop your contact list. What it means is you have to kind of alter your expectations to see how you tell the story and how they can be associated with you. So you need to do also, and many nonprofits aren't aware of this, because they think different than again, a for-profit company selling a product. But you really need to focus on how do you stand out from the crowd. That's very, very important, because the chances are you are not the only nonprofit organization that is doing whatever to do. Even to go back to the American Cancer Society, there are probably, if not more, maybe 100 organizations devoted to cancer, and whether it's cancer, helping cancer survivors, etc. Even if we look only at breast cancer, Susan Komen gets a lot of attention. The Susan Komen Foundation, they do great work. The Avon Walk is for someone else. And there are other, you know, organizations that are helping breast cancer survivors. There's a group I'm aware of that basically comes in and cleans the homes of going through chemotherapy who are having breast cancer. And so they have, and there's another organization that does nothing but provide wigs for people whose hair has fallen out. So even in that specific niche, there are many, many organizations. And so how does your organization stand out? What makes you unique? What makes you different? And so that's something to think about as you are thinking about how to tell the story of your group. Now, you have a number of different goals that you as a director are asked to promote and achieve. And they could be fundraising, as I mentioned earlier, but very often education. So we need to make people aware of what's going on. We need to make people aware of the fact that this is a problem that needs to be solved, that there is a solution perhaps for the particular problem. There may be advocacy, which again is going out and reaching out to various community members or stakeholders. And there may also be recruitment. What you may be asked to do is to go out and recruit volunteers or recruit constituent members to use the services of the nonprofit. So all of those things may be goals that you as a board member are asked about, and there are places where you need to be able to tell the story. So you need to ask, what is it you need to accomplish? What are the goals of the organization? What are the messages you want to leave? Because there's a specific message that your organization to leave people with. How much money do you need to raise if that's an issue? what program you need to drive, what what are your goals in terms of recruiting members, recruiting constituents, etc. And so very much if you think about Alan's overview of objectives, measures, and values, think about your objectives. Your measures are going to tell you, how will I know if I have this? And then the value to the organization is going to be, again, very similar to it would be if you were doing this for a client. And the clearer you can be, and you'll see as I'm talking about bringing in a lot of Alan's concepts because they very much apply here, the clearer you can be, the easier it's going to be to get people to kind of march together and achieve your goal. Now, one of the things that's different about working with nonprofits, and it's good and it's bad, you're not hiring and firing people, you're not paying for the most part, you may have a small staff, so you're able to kind of scale up without having to worry about, do I have the salary for this? So you're able to add a lot of people, and that's good. The bad side of that is because you're not paying people, they can pick up and leave whenever they want. And very often you will get people that are very enthusiastic about your cause, but don't necessarily have the right skill set or are not the right person whether it's a skill set in terms of promotion or recruiting or whatever, or very often they just don't play well with us, and so there becomes some power plays that can go on. And so you need to be aware of all that as you're trying to tell the story. And it's important to try and match the resources you have with the openings that you have available. So we need someone to do a marketing campaign for us, but gee, we don't necessarily have the right people. Can we go find some help for that? And can we take the person who really would like to do that and find a role for them in the organization that will value to the organization and make them feel wanted and appreciated as well? So, and I'm going to talk for a few more minutes and then open this up for questions. But let's talk a little bit about who you might be targeting. And again, this might be related to financial, it might be related to membership, to volunteers. You need to look down from above, and you need to say, if I perhaps had looked at large organizations, if I'm looking down, maybe there's some smaller groups that I might be looking at, some places I hadn't looked at in other situations. So maybe I should be looking at stay-at-home moms who might have some part-time to do this. Maybe I should be talking to small businesses as opposed to large Fortune 500 organizations. So look at different targets. It may be time to revisit the value proposition, what it is your organization does. If you find that as a board member that things seem, and I'll talk in a moment a little bit more about what a value proposition is. And you may want to beaten path, go places you hadn't gone before. But it's always key to understand how to differentiate yourself. So let me just talk for a moment about what a value proposition is. Value proposition is what makes a product or a service or a solution different from all the other offerings there. And a good value proposition has three parts. What problem do you address? The second is, how do you solve the problem? And the third is, what makes your solution different from the other alternatives out there? So to repeat, what problem do you address? How do you solve the problem? And third, what makes you different? Who are we and what makes us stand out? Now, as you do this, you have to consider the other alternatives. To go back to my cancer organization example, there is a problem, and the problem is of cancer, but that's not a specific enough problem because there are a lot of people who are addressing that specific problem do you see people have out there. And then how are you solving a problem that's different from those other organizations? And how do you solve a problem in general? And then third, how is that solution different from all the other alternatives that are out there? And if you're not different, then stop and think, why are we here and should we be working with someone else? Because it's going to be hard for us to differentiate. So you want to consider all the alternatives. And one of the alternatives is that people don't do anything. And, for example, if it's related to the environment or something like that, and one of the if you're trying to get people to use less energy, one of the alternatives that they have is that they continue to use energy the way they, and they don't work with your nonprofit. So one of the other alternatives might be that they work with self. So consider that. And then consider what we call barriers to entry. How easy is it for someone else to create the same solution that you have? how easy would it be for another nonprofit to say, hey, we do things exactly the same way? And in that case, how are you going to really differentiate yourself and make yourself feel a bit different? So your value proposition is really your unique, okay, and it differentiates you by identifying those characteristics that make you and your organization special and different from all the other choices that are available to your audiences, okay? And it tells people why they should care about you. So very often, if you're into working with an organization that has been around for a long time, it's quite possible that the value proposition you had a few years ago or you've had for a number of years needs to be revisited because things are different now. We have the internet. We have a lot of things happening online. We have families are very different than they were before. Organizations are different. The economy is different, et cetera. So it's very, very important to look at that, to think about what you might have to do to update things. Now, one of the things that you have to think about is how you're going to market yourself. And again, I'm going to go back to another concept here, which is marketing gravity. And since I'm talking to Alan's audience, I'm not going to explain what marketing gravity is because I'm going to presume you're all familiar with that. But I will say that it applies here in spades. Just about everything you can do for your own marketing gravity, you can do for your nonprofit. Now, that's just about because there's some things that might not be appropriate. However, if you consider, and in any of Alan's books, you've seen the marketing gravity wheel, almost all of those things that are in there, you can take and you can apply in your own situation and for the nonprofit. And think about how you can use those to help tell your story. Now, sometimes the great things about nonprofit is sometimes you can do it for a lot less. And in fact, if you go to that link that Terry was telling you on my website, there are a list of resources. For example, Google AdWords has a nonprofit capability. They'll provide AdWords at no charge. Yahoo will provide discounts on some things. There are other places that you can actually go and nonprofit rate, particularly if you have the 501c3 status, that you're able to get things either at no cost whatsoever or at a very much of a lower cost. Now, sometimes to do some of these marketing things, you may need to get sponsors. You may need to pay for some of this. And so that's okay, but understanding that and have those channels available to you is important. So you need to think differently about perhaps some of the things your organization has done before. How can you leverage the expertise of your members or your volunteers? How can you actually use these people that actually have something that's of value to the organization in terms of skills and resources? One thing to do is to stop looking at things that aren't important or aren't very effective. Very often you'll find an organization has been doing a mailing on a basis or they've been holding an event for a period of time, and you may look at this and say, wow, you're not getting very much out of it. There was a time we did, or, you know, we're doing that, but we're reaching the same people. We're not reaching new volunteers. So think about what you can stop doing and where you can implement some creativity. And sometimes you've got people who are very much tied to the way things have been done, and so you can kind of hit a wall at times. But that's where you've been brought as a high-powered consultant, and that's why you're on the board, is to consider how to make this happen, how to help the organization get to the next level. I'd recommend that you focus in on a few key areas. One of the problems I do see very often with nonprofits is everybody's ideas and everybody wants to do everything, and there's such great, wonderful potential marketing activities or promotions or campaigns or activities that we can do, and we want to go on in all of them. And that's wonderful, but they have to be implemented one after the other. But you have a limited amount of resources, a limited amount of time, probably a limited amount of money, and this is not anyone's day job. So you have to understand that as soon as everybody feels passionate about your cause and they want to go off and do this, most of them, except for your limited paid staff, they have their own jobs, they have their own families, they have other things going on. They get excited about something, but when it comes to actually following through and implementing, it doesn't always happen. So you want to start with a few key areas, start small and expand that. Again, take advantage of things that are free or low cost, and also start doing things that are new and daring. Try something that's kind of out of the box and hasn't been done before, And, you know, if it doesn't work, that's okay. You've tried it. And, you know, maybe there's some ways you can use social media. Maybe there's some ways you can go places you haven't been before. But try some of those things. Understand where you shine. So, for example, success stories. Talk about the families you've helped, outcomes you've changed, the patients you've supported. How do you get those stories out to people? I would highly recommend that you have at least a website. If your organization is part of a national or an international nonprofit group, it's possible that website is tied to that parent entity. But you should have a local website or a local URL that just takes people directly to your particular chapter in that case. And that's where, you know, again, the web is a great way to build credibility, to, like, let people know about your story. Make sure that you have that out there, that you're talking about the great outcomes, the testimony, so to speak, and really use the opportunity to pull at the heartstrings. This is, as I mentioned earlier, a great place to play on emotions, particularly when you're doing this as a way to talk about the good things that you've done and why your organization is really worth supporting. Talk about how you're different and what you do that no one else does, as I've mentioned before. And then the importance, go out and tell your story. And tell it often. Tell it quite a bit. No noise if you don't make it. So you need to go out and tell people, no matter how good you are, you cannot presume that people are going to just promote you because you've done good things. You've got to get out there. Right now, there's so much noise in the system. The bad news, the good news about the social media today is that there's so many different ways we can use to promote ourselves. And so many tools, so less expensive and all of that. The bad news is everybody's using them, including the people who don't know what they're doing, who are making more noise, but not, you know, not a lot of light, so to speak. And, you know, it's even harder and harder, today to be seen above all that noise, or as I talk about, above all that fray, and to stand out. So how are you going to go out your story? You need to find a way to stand up above all of that, and that's that no matter how good you are, you have to be promoting and telling the story, you know, in terms of as many different ways and as a message as you can get out there as possible. So let me tell you as a summary before we open this up to questions, let me say there's just four ways to think about. So first, you want to stop anything that's non-critical or not working. Perhaps things that have been done this way for years that aren't as effective. The second is you want to start looking at new approaches and have a new focus. The third is to look at the expertise available to you. And then the fourth is to listen to what your audiences are telling you. So listen to what your constituents say. Listen to what they're telling you. So just like when you told your kids about crossing the road, you want to stop, start, look, and listen in terms of your marketing activities. And then let me just say that for a marketing campaign, you want to start with the basics and add things as you go. Package and promote everything that you've got. So just because you're doing something good, don't presume that everybody knows your story. Make sure you set some goals that are achievable and measurable so you know that you've achieved them and celebrate the successes. And then make sure, you measure your progress as you go. And make mid-course corrections. Oops, we tried that campaign. We thought we'd reach out and be able to raise some money there. That's not working. Let's not keep going down that path. Let's find another path that may make sense moving forward. So I've got a lot of other things I can tell you about, but I'm going to stop right here for a moment. And, Terry, let's see if we have any questions.
Yes, and thank you, Linda. I think Laura has some questions that have been coming into her. If anybody has other questions and you did not get her email address before, let me just repeat it. It's Laura at M as in Mary, IK as in Kite, US as in Sam, K as in Kite, A.com. So forward those to Laura, and Laura, I'll turn it over to you with questions you've received thus far.
Thank you very much, Terry, and thank you, Linda, for an interesting presentation. I do have some questions, and I'd like to start off with one that's a question about how can we ensure consistency of messaging to all our audiences when we're telling our story?
That's a great question. And, of course, since you're not controlling who says everything to various audiences the way you might in a for-profit nonprofit organization. Some of this may get a little bit fuzzy at times, but you control that by giving people the messages that you want to have out there. And that sounds pretty simple, but very often I see organizations where we've got a big overarching goal, we've got our mission, but we don't tell people what the messages are, and therefore they kind of make it up as they go along. So what you need to say is, when you're talking to donors, here's the key message and here's the three bullets underneath. When you're talking to potential constituents, here's the key message and here's the three bullets underneath. When you're talking to, you know, local government officials, here's the message. So the more you can outline that and distribute that effectively to your team, the more likely that they will they'll have the right things to say. And then you need to impress on them. You need to probably do some training and say, we want you to use your own contacts. We want you to go out and help us in any way you can. But it's very important to us that people understand why we're here, what we do, how we do it. And so please make sure that you're using these messages as effectively as possible.
That's great. That's very clear. You mentioned the difference between a for-profit organization versus a nonprofit. What's different about promoting nonprofits versus for-profits?
So what's different is, first of all, you are promoting, in most cases, a service, not a product. And I say in most cases because I have seen nonprofits that have a book or a series of educational seminars that become sort of like a product. But for the most part, you're promoting a service. And you're promoting something that, that's different in the sense that it's not something we want you to buy and to purchase and to become kind of a consumer of. It's something we want you to support. It's a cause for the most part. And we want you to identify, and as I mentioned, as emotional as it can be to go buy a new iPad or whatever, emotion really plays in much, much stronger to the nonprofit area. So you want people to identify with your cause. You want people to feel that there's a need to support it. And you are looking at usually discretionary funds. So just as I might stop going out and spending money on some things if the economy gets bad and money gets tight, I might also stop promoting or supporting a nonprofit unless I feel that the cause is so important that I'd rather go without that latte to be able to make sure that I can continue to make sure the work of this organization goes on and is effective. So there's that piece that's different. You're not controlling a product with a product release the way you might in a for-profit world, that we have this product now and we're going to have another product next year. So you may have a very consistent set of offerings in terms of services that doesn't change very much from year to year. You know, if you're providing service for the homeless, you know, you don't just change that because it's 2011 and we're going to have a new offering of this. You change it because you have either a need that changes or something isn't working, or you have the capability to provide something that's a little bit different. So all of those things are different with nonprofits, but if you think about that, most of the other things are the same. You still need to know your audience. You still need to know your message. You still need to know how to go out and reach them and touch those buttons so that they're willing to open up to you and provide whatever it is you're looking for.
Okay, I'd love to know if you can suggest a model for creating the script to tell the story.
A model for creating the script. So I think there's a couple of things that you can do. First is I think go through the thought of the value proposition, and then you can go through the audience. And actually in my workbook, Promoting Your Nonprofit, I actually have a couple of exercises. One is to look at your key audience and identify who your critical problems are and why that's important. The second thing I have is to really start to look at who are your constituents, what are the problems that they're facing, how your group's impacted by the economy, who are the individuals you're going after, who you're competing against. So as you start to fill out and kind of go through some of that, you can then start to really very clearly put together some messages. And again, it's very similar to the way you might put together messages for your own consulting practice. Here's what I do. Here's my value proposition. Here's who I go after. So think about the way you might do this for yourself and superimpose this on a nonprofit group. The difference being that you probably will have more audiences for a nonprofit because, again, you have everything from sponsors and donors and fundraising to constituents and volunteers. So there's a lot of different audiences to work with. But But certainly that model of understanding what you have, what your value proposition is, and very much understanding your target audience. One of the things that we do a lot is we look at what we call personas, and that says, can I identify the characteristics of who I want to reach? So if, you know, for example, I go back to breast cancer, we're talking about women who are between the ages of 45 and 65, and they've either, you know, they've had breast cancer in the family, or we're talking about their children who've lost a mom to breast cancer or whatever, and they're in a certain economic group, and they here's what they tend to do. And here's, you know, we even put a name. This is Debbie, and here's the characteristics of Debbie. And the better you can actually build that profile and even put a picture against it about what she might look like, the better you can then look at that profile and that persona and say, are the messages that I'm creating, are they going to resonate with Debbie, or is she going to say, gee, that's just more bull? You know, that just sounds like a lot of hype here. So the more you can focus on that, if you're with an organization and you're looking for sponsorship, you might say, here's the persona of the type of organization likely to sponsor us. And the more you can fill that in, the easier it is for you to take the messages and really target them to the right people, and to also know when you're talking to someone, do they fit my sweet spot or not?
You mentioned earlier that there might be some squabbling or sometimes, you know, board members don't agree or there's a power trip. How can we ensure that we're getting the best fit when we're recruiting board members and volunteers?
Well, that's a good question. And I think a lot of it is preventative. So you want to do a good job screening people. There is a tendency very often with nonprofits to take whoever happens to show up. So, hi, I'm here and I'd like to work for you. Oh, that's great. Let me put you to use. And I'm so thrilled because I'm not paying you anything, and here's someone who wants to work. And there's something to be said for that. Certainly you can't turn people away or you're not going to have anybody there working for you. But it's very important that you screen people and you understand what you think are the characteristics that will be success. So if you have volunteer roles that, for example, are going to help with fundraising or with driving our annual walk-a-thon, here's the type of activities you're going to do. Here's the type of skill set that you need for that, and here's the type of experience. So it's really almost creating job descriptions and then interviewing and matching people against the job descriptions just the way you would if you were hiring people to a for-profit role. And then certainly, because you're not paying people, you may have to compromise a little bit, but you want to understand what's absolutely critical. And if it's critical that you have really good organizational skills, and that you can you know how to use databases because we're going to be marketing to a database, then if someone shows up and they don't seem very organized and they don't have that database experience, then you say, look, I know you'd love to do that, but here's another position that we think might be better fitted for you and for the organization. Because otherwise, if you just put people into slots without considering the skill set required to be successful, that becomes an an opportunity for disaster, because it's like an accident waiting to happen. You know it's not going to happen. You know that things aren't going to get done. And so you just do the best you can. And then just as in the for-profit world, sometimes things work and sometimes they don't. Sometimes it can be easier to move on out of a nonprofit role. And sometimes you have to understand the political ramifications of disengaging from someone and be willing to take those steps forward.
That's a great idea to have job descriptions. That way everybody's clear.
Mm-hmm.
Along those lines, do you have any ideas you can share to figure out what hot buttons might be for different audiences? How do we identify different hot buttons? What are some of the things
hot buttons? Okay. Part of that, I think, is very quickly, again, identifying the characteristics as much as possible, and then go out and interview people. There's nothing wrong with calling. If you've identified the Debbie persona, for example, there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, I'm with such and such, you know, support organization for cancer, and I'd love to talk to you about what are the issues that you have, and where do you find that you're being supported, and where are the issues where you're having problems? And I'm sure this organization that I've heard of locally who's out and cleans the houses of women going through chemotherapy was created because someone said, you know, there's the American Cancer Society, and there's, you know, Susan Komen, and there's Avon, and they're doing all this great stuff, but my problem is I am so sick after these these therapies, I can't even clean my house. And someone said, bing, there's an opportunity there. Here's how we can help. And so they were able to, you know, to both recruit volunteers and raise money and, you know, and offer this service. And then, oh, by the way, they actually are connected with, like, the local American Cancer Society, who says, by the way, if you need this, here's this group that does this for you. So there's a complementary place there. So there's nothing wrong with going out. In fact, it's a good idea to do some market research and talk to the people who you want to be reaching and saying, tell us what's going on. We're here to listen to you. And my feeling is, in general, that most of the time, just about all of the time, if you show up and say, I'm not asking for money, I'm not even asking for, you know, for any kind of volunteer perspective or commitment, I just want to listen to you and tell me what's working and what's not, people love to be listened to. They don't feel, with all of the social media tools we have for people to talk today, you'd be surprised at how few really feel like they're being listened to. And so just sit and listen and take notes, and then don't ask for a donation, don't ask if would you please volunteer, but have that as kind of a separate activity, and understand and go talk to enough people so that you start to see a pattern. Just because one person says something doesn't mean that this is, you know, drop everything and create a new program. But talk to enough people so you say, here's a pattern of what we see that's needed, and from that point you can then take your messages and move forward from there.
Great. So something from the for-profit world, such as market research, can really work for nonprofits.
Absolutely. A lot of the tools, most of the tools we use in for-profits can work very effectively in nonprofits.
So one of the tools in for-profits, of course, is marketing. How much of a nonprofit's attention should be focused on marketing?
And that's a really good question, because obviously you can't be marketing all the time, because you have a mission, you have something you need to do, and you need to reserve enough resources and time to accomplish what it is you're there on the planet for. On the other hand, if you're spending all of your time delivering a service or creating a support system and you're not telling people about it, then pretty soon you may find yourself out of business. So you need to balance that, and I would say that kind of balance will shift over time. If you're about to launch something new, if you're a new organization or you've got a new service, you need to spend a little more time marketing yourself and letting things go. If you have an annual event, whether it's a walkathon or a benefit or something that's coming up, you're going to have a marketing curve around that. And so you're going to have kind of peaks and valleys during the year when you'll find, if you're doing something that's related to education, there's going to be a peak around the start of the school year, because that's when people are focused on education. Come June, you know, no one wants to hear about it. So there may be some natural cycles. There may be some things. People tend to get a little more generous right before the holidays. But there's also things that happen. You know, February is heart month, right? So we focus on that. And March is this, and October is, I believe, diabetes month. So, you know, so there are different ways you can focus on that. But the key is to never, when you're out of that peak period, you then don't want to go dark the rest of the year. You want to have a minimum level of marketing going on all of the time, because you want to keep awareness in all of your constituencies. You want to let people know you're there. You want to make sure that you're getting new ideas in front of them, that you're being creative. So you want to have some stuff going on all the time, and perhaps some peaks that either tie to things that are natural seasonal types of things, or or are tied to events that you have going on where you have to ramp things up a little bit more than you might otherwise.
As a board
we
member,
have about time for one more question, if there is another question.
Okay, there's one more question. As a board member, should I expect to be a spokesperson for the group? And if so, what do I need to know?
That's a really good question. And here's the thing. You, as a board, the board should have a spokesperson, a designated spokesperson. That doesn't mean that every board member should be the spokesperson, but it should be clear that, in general, when we need someone to speak for the board, it should be Terry, it should be Laura, it should be Kathy, whomever. What that means is that when you are officially announcing something, et cetera, and sometimes there's a chairman of the board or a senior board person, but not always. And so there should be someone identified for that. However, you, again, as I mentioned earlier on, as a board member, you should be expected that at certain times you'll be asked to represent the board, perhaps on no notice. By the way, I'm here with Terry. Did you know that Terry is on the board of blah, blah, blah? Terry, can you explain for the folks here in the room what it is a nonprofit does. Bing, you have to be prepared to do that. So I think there's two things. There's one is the official kind of designated spokesperson for all the time, and the second is that every board member should be expected to represent the organization well on fairly short notice. And how do you get trained for that is really to work, if you have a marketing coordinator or someone who's doing this within the organization, make sure that they have the right information to you, that they have given you the right messages, you understand who you're talking to, you understand what you should and shouldn't say. I have kind of my, I have something I call my Miranda warning, which is that if you're familiar with this from all the TV police shows, anything you say can and will be used against you in the press. So you need to be very, very careful about what you say, and you do have the right to remain silent and not say something that might possibly hurt the organization. However, no comment is not the right answer in most cases as well, but just be aware of the fact that things that you say may be taken out of context, they may be twisted around a bit, and so there are groups that can work with you, with your organization, and help improve the communication skills. Certainly, again, there are groups you can hire to help with your marketing, but also to help with communication, understanding, putting you through some sample kind of role plays so you know how a press, how the press might address you. And in most cases, with most nonprofits, it's not an adversarial type of relationship. It's not a crisis communication type of situation where people are really trying to pull the 60 minutes, tell us what really went on. For the most part, if you're running an event and they want to find out about the walk that you're doing on Sunday, it's because people want to find out about your organization and they want to promote you. So approach that from a very positive perspective. If you ever get to the point where there's some crisis that's happening, then you really do need to appoint one person to represent you and make sure that they are well-versed in what should and shouldn't be said and all the potential minefields of questions that might be asked. And we used to talk about doing what we call the rude FAQ, which is what are the rudest questions that someone could ask you in terms of frequently asked questions, and to have the answers of those and to go through that, and that way you know you're prepared. And you'll never get every question, but again, in most cases with a nonprofit, people are very open and positive. It's very rare that you'd have someone who's really trying to trip you up.
What a wonderful summary, Linda. I think that really just, and I love your idea of the Miranda warning because I think that's so appropriate. We've come to the end of our time today, and I hope that everyone's enjoyed the presentation by Linda Popke, Tell the Story. Again, I want to remind you that she has a number of free resources on the subject on her website, and again, that address is leveragetomarket.com, and again, you can use the numerical 2 or TO. The next session is...
For a second, I do want to, because I didn't have a chance to cover this, on that website, I do have an article called 10 Tips to Promote Your Nonprofit. So if you go to my website and you go to the nonprofit tab and you go there, you can print that out, and it's some very quick tips that should be appropriate to any nonprofit organization.
Fantastic. Thank you. The next session is Ensure the Availability of Sufficiency of Resources, Part 1. I'm sure that's something everybody is looking for. That one is going to be with Karen Eber-Davis, Laura Makuska, I will do this one day, right, Laura, I promise you, and Kathy Kingston. That session is July 28th at noon Eastern Standard Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. To join us, if you've not already received an invitation for our next session, you can register by contacting Laura, and I have given you that email several times. Again, Laura at M as in Mary, IKU, S as in Sam, K8.com. To close, we'd just like to once again thank Alan Weiss for his support of this project and wish everybody a good afternoon. Take care.